Hello, 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 and welcome to another edition of the Firm Podcast on the Radio St. Pete Network. I am your host, Michael Duggar, and today's show, another strictly NFL podcast and episode. Recording this Friday morning at this part, and we've only had a couple teams play their second preseason game, and that's probably where we will start. You know, I'll hit on some of the injuries that have taken place in the NFL over the past couple days, and then I'm going to do mostly fantasy football. You know, this is the time of the year. It's middle of August. This is the time where most people have their fantasy drafts, where fantasy drafts begin happening. I'm a person who likes drafting later, towards after Labor Day or around Labor Day weekend, because all the injuries that would have happened in the preseason, all position battles, all that stuff would have taken place or come to an end, per se, of who's made the team or not. But I know a lot of people, including myself, who has a draft at the time of this airing on Saturday, don't have that luxury of waiting too long because of people's schedules and all that stuff. So we're just going to begin with a game that happened last night and a player that I've hit on a couple times on this podcast, and that is the New York Jets and Sam Darnold and Teddy Bridgewater and all that stuff. So we're hitting on both sides of the game. And let me pull up the box score. And so the Jets took on the Washington Redskins. It was a typical preseason game. Not that much goes on. But this one had a lot of eyes because right before the game started, Sam Darnold, Todd Bowles, the coach of the Jets, announced that Sam Darnold was the head coach. Head coach Todd Bowles announced that Sam Darnold will be starting the game, his first career start, preseason or not. And that kind of states that Sam Darnold has beaten out Bridgewater and Josh McCown is okay being the backup quarterback. So everyone's on the Darnold train, all this stuff. You know, last week, his first game of the NFL career, he came in. I think he had a high completion percentage, didn't really push the ball down the field, and he led a touchdown drive. And threw a pretty great pass to the front right pylon. So he comes into this game, and I'll talk about the Redskins a little bit at the end, but he comes into this game, gets three and out the first drive, and then the second drive comes in and leads a scoring drive, a field goal. So he didn't play that much. His final statistics were 8 for 11, 62 yards, no touchdowns, and a pick. So nothing really pops out. You know, the O-line for the Jets isn't the greatest. The skill position players aren't the... I like them. I mean, I know they're not the Pittsburgh Steelers or any of these teams, but they do have some players on their team, like Robbie Anderson. Quincy Anona was not playing at the moment. Jermaine Kearse made some plays last year on McCown. I like their backfield with Bilal Powell and Isaiah Crowell. Thomas Rhodes in the mix. I don't know if he's going to make the team. Ardarius Stewart's a talented receiver from Bama. And tight end position, they lost Austin Safari Jenkins, who was probably their second best weapon behind Rob Anderson last year. So you look at that. You look at their offensive lines is a work in progress and all that stuff. And you can make some excuses for him, but some things you can't excuse are how he seems gun-shy in the backfield, which is okay, but he has, you know, I talked about happy feet with Baker Mayfield and how he's always like, you know, tat, 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 moving his feet, looking downfield, keeping his eyes on the downfield and stuff like that. Darnold looks pretty uncomfortable in the pocket, and I'm not saying it's worrying or alarming because he's so young and all that stuff, but you can't be, we criticize people for being dink and dunk quarterbacks throughout the whole. You know, we criticized Joe Flacco for being a dink and dunk quarterback the past couple seasons. And, you know, who else? Sam Bradford's a dink and dunk, although his yards per attempt has increased a little bit. But Darnold threw yards per attempt under 6 yards last night. And that's terrible. That's not pushing the ball down the field. That's not showing off this rocket arm that he has. You know, he has some good mobility in the pocket, but we hope to see him use that mobility to get out of the pocket and throw the ball, push the ball down the field. And we haven't seen that yet. The first two games, he's been severely outplayed by Teddy Bridgewater, a player that Noah, you know, previous guest Noah Hemer, and I have talked about since before a preseason snap was taken about how there's a teams in the NFL should take a look at Teddy. And he showed it again today. 10 for 15, 127 yards, touchdown and a pick. He was playing, yes, he was playing against like third strings and four strings and all that, but he also was playing against them, but he also was playing with them. So he doesn't have the best, you know, receivers around him, skill set players around him and stuff like that. And he still made plenty of plays. His touchdown throw to, Charon Peak was a beautiful escape and throw. Dodged one defender and threw a beautiful ball. It was a great catch by Peak, but, you know, in the mold of Darnold, part of the knock on Bridgewater was that throughout his career in Minnesota is that he doesn't have the strongest arm and he doesn't push the ball on the field. Now we're seeing his yards per attempt above 9 in these first two preseason games. We see him putting the ball with uncanny accuracy. He's finding spots. He's making all the reads. He looks confident. That knee doesn't even look like an issue anymore. So the Jets probably do have a quarterback, not controversy, because we know Darnold. They gave up a lot of capital to get Darnold for the rights to draft Darnold. But if the goal is to win now, Bridgewater is the obvious choice. And I've said it before, and I'll say it again. I've said it for like a month now. The Bucks should trade they should trade a fifth-round pick and try to get Bridgewater in the mix. He may not be the starter from week one, but now you have and beat out Fitzpatrick. May not even be the starter this year. But after this season, then we have a legit quarterback competition, and we have a safe fallback plan if we do not choose to extend, not even extend Jameis, but to exercise his option to pay him his fifth-year option and then sign him to a long-term deal. So, I mean, there wasn't that much to take away from this game. It's a 15-13, a dull preseason game, but everyone's pretty much going to be talking about Darnold and Bridgewater. I know that by the time this goes up, I'm going to have missed. Maybe I won't miss. Maybe I'll wait a little bit at the end of the show and go circle back and talk about the Josh Allen Baker Mayfield game that's happening Friday night. But as of now, on Friday morning, a lot of people are talking about Bridgewater should be the guy, and he should be given the keys to the Jets. To fly the Jets, that's a terrible pun, not going to use that. So, I love Bridgewater. I think, I'm a fan of Bortles, so I know people are saying Jacksonville should try to trade something for him, but I mean, Bortles got you to the AFC title game, and it's not his fault they lost. I mean, the play calling got so predictable in the second half, and the game, like, they have a game plan. They had, like, 25 plays scripted, and after that, they didn't have anything to do. And that's what Belichick does, is Belichick, against the Patriots, the game that is, that Bill Belichick makes halftime adjustments and figures out and just stops what you're trying to do. Not to mention that they had a touchdown call back. That was a bunch of controversy of Miles Jack on that strip fumble of Deion Lewis. But besides the Bucks, the team that comes to mind is the other Florida team. The third one, and that's the Miami Dolphins, who Bridgewater's from Miami. Tannehill, injury prone. We're still unsure. I mean, I think Bridgewater's a better quarterback. They have a lot of skills. They have a lot of talent there in the backfield on the O-line. They're okay on the offensive line. They're young. And then they have skill position players. Devontae Parker, Albert Wilson, Danny Amendola, Kenny Stills, Gesicki, the tight end that just drafted from Penn State. Like, they have a lot of talent, and I think Bridgewater should be there. And he would revitalize the fan base because the Dolphins fans I know, they don't get really excited about Tannehill. I mean, I think Tannehill's an okay quarterback. He gets the job done, does what he's asked, but he can't stay healthy. And the best ability is availability. And especially in football, when there's only 16 games and at a position of that much importance, like the quarterback, you have to be able to be relied on to be there every single game. And that's not something we see from Tannehill. So I don't know what they can offer him. I'm not sure what their draft capital is. I don't think they have any enticing players that the Jets would want, but, I mean, it's worth a shot if you're them. So, and then we'll quickly touch on the Redskins real quick before we get into Little Fans Football Talk. And I've been pretty high on the Washington Redskins the whole offseason. I think Jay Gruden's a great coach. I think he's been pretty unlucky in recent years. I think the injury bug has bitten – the Redskins terribly. When Jordan Reed, their tight end's on the field, this offense is dynamic. I think getting rid of Terrell Pryor, who is now on the Jets, and they took a chance on him last year. I think that's going to open up the route tree for all their receivers. They brought in Paul Richardson, who is a deep threat. Josh Doctson is a growing deep threat. They still have Jamison Crowder. They have two tight ends in Jordan Reed and Vernon Davis, who can do a lot, so they can line up a lot of ways. And the person that was going to tie this all together, and they brought in Alex Smith, who a quarterback who I think is an upgrade on Kirk Cousins. He can do a lot of things well. He doesn't turn the ball over. He takes what the defense gives him. I heard Jason Witten say that last night, and it makes perfect sense. And with all these deep threats, with Doctson demanding, you know, attention, Paul Richardson is capable of making great catches down the field, Jamison Crowder maneuvering the middle of the field from a short to intermediate range, that's going to leave a bunch of short passing windows open for Reed and Vernon Davis, who had a nice little catch yesterday, catch and run. And he's rekindling his relationship with Alex Smith because they play together in San Francisco. So the person who's going to tie us all together was an explosive running back, and they got that in Darius Geis in the second round. Unfortunately, since we last went on, his ACL was confirmed torn. He's out for the season. And Robert Kelly doesn't get me excited, the running back now. Samaj Perine, he left the game injured yesterday. So they're kind of thin at running back. Byron Marshall, who has some speed, fumbled a kicker to kick off. Although it was overturned, he still fumbled it. So that's going to leave a bad taste in their mouth. Capri Bibbs is getting carries. I mean, this is just not an exciting backfield. So unless they sign someone in free agency, I'm not sure who they're going to go after. This is going to be another. This is just not looking good for the Washington Redskins' outlook. But one thing we did see is Alex Smith, he only played one drive, 4 for 6, 48 yards, led a field goal drive. But he's going to get the ball to his playmakers in space. He's going to make the right decision, and that's not something we saw from Kirk Cousins. So is the loss of Geis going to destroy my love for the Redskins this year? Probably not. I mean, I think Gruden and Smith are going to dial a lot of things up. They have a strong offensive line. They have one of the best O-line coaches in the history of the NFL and Bill Callahan there. So the run game, they may not have an explosive running back on the roster right now, but their O-line is going to be designed well, and they're going to pass block well. Brandon Schreff, Trent Williams, those are two of the best linemen at their position in the whole league. And you have them Schreff on the interior and Williams on the exterior. That's going to, you know, that's good if they can stay healthy, if Williams can stay healthy. So I thought they were going to win the division, if I'm being honest. I think the Eagles are going to take a step back, and the news with Nick Foles being injured, and we don't know how severe that shoulder injury is on his throwing arm, or throwing shorter, I should say. We don't know how that's going to affect the Eagles in the beginning of the season, because are they going to push Wentz out there early? The Bucs play them week two. If we're not facing Foles, we're facing Nate Sudfeld or another quarterback off the streets. You know, that makes the Bucs look that's a very winnable game for the Bucs in week two. So, and even if it's a hobbled Wentz, that helps a lot too. So until we know the severity of Nick Foles' injury, which we'll probably know by the time this podcast is up, There's a gap for Washington. I don't think they're going to win the division. Will they fight for a playoff spot? It took 10 wins last year. The 11 and 10 were the win totals for the two wildcard teams, the NFC. So I'm not sure if they're going to be able to get to that. Maybe 9. And then they get Geis back and they can reinvest some of their... They can bring in another playmaker, have another solid draft, because their D-line is growing. That defense is getting strong in the front seven. They got DJ Swearinger in the safety in the back, of Josh Norman. Those are two. They just cut Orlando Scandrick because they're loving their development of the rookie corners. And their linebackers are good. They have Ryan Kerrigan, Preston Brown. There's just a lot of talent on this up front, who they draft. They drafted Payne from Deron Payne, I think his name is, from Alabama. They already have Jonathan Allen from Alabama. So they're building up front and using first-round picks on these linemen. And that's what's going to pay off for them, I think. So, realistically, I say 8 to 9 wins for Washington. I know I did my favorite overs a couple of podcasts ago. I didn't mention them, but, you know, I could see that, even without Geis. And we'll see if they bring in anyone from any running backs in. And if Chris Thompson can come back, you know, before week four, I think that's a big boost. I love Chris Thompson. He's one of the best pass-catching backs in the NFL. And I think that would be a huge step forward. So we'll leave this dull 15-13 game out, and we'll go to the Eagles-Patriots game real quick. And the main takeaway of this was the Foles injury I just touched on. I don't know what's going to happen with that. Sudfeld's going to be the quarterback and stuff. But another thing happened is Rex Burkhead, running back for the Patriots, are already they're never thin at running back, but right now they could probably be as thin as they'd ever be with Sony Michel, their first-round pick, being, what's the word? He already had knee injury history, and now he's that's continued. And he's probably going to miss beginning. He's not going to maybe not miss the beginning of the season, but he's not practicing well. His fumble issues are still there, but he has his knee issues have resurfaced a little bit. And then Rex Burkhead now has a slight tear in his knee that doesn't require surgery, and he can still play, but he's going to be limited. So now they're going to be mostly relying on James White, Jeremy Hill, if Jeremy Hill can beat out Mike Gillisley, which is probably going to happen. So New England's getting stretched at the running back position already. They're without Edelman for the first 4 weeks. But none of it matters because they're turning Cordell Patterson into a real player. Which is just another reason that people hate the Patriots is that they take the most talented players off the scrap, put them in their system for one offseason, not even a full offseason, and they're making plays. But because they know how to utilize their talent and the players they bring in the best way possible. They identify their talent and they move forward with that. So besides that, the other preseason game was Packers, Steelers. Nothing really stands out. I mean, Rodgers didn't play that much. Big Ben, I don't think even played at all because he was a little woozy from a hit he took on Tuesday at practice. But luckily that's concussion. He didn't get a concussion. So I think that's it. And we're going to move on to fantasy football. And I don't play daily. I may take the jump and start playing daily fantasy football this year. But I love season long. I love draft season. I love helping people with their drafts, setting lineups. I know it tears me apart sometimes. I've lost championships because I make pretty dumb changes. I play the matchups too much, and I would just be like, I don't like this. I just go like that. And now I've got to the point where I'm stubborn enough, and I'm like, whatever got me here, I stick with that. And that's what I like to do. That's my philosophy now. I ride with the players you get, unless it's like a defense, like play the best matchup for defenses and special teams and stuff like that. But it's here, and it seems that it's the return of the running back. That's something that I've talked about before in terms of on the field, but in fantasy football, I'm looking at non-PPR usually is receivers, and non-PPR for people. There's two types. there's a couple types of fantasy football you play. You play non-PPR, and PPR stands for point per reception. So every time a running back, tight end, wide receiver, whoever catches a pass, that reception counts for 1 point. People do half PPR, which is the same thing. You half a point for each catch. And if people do non-PPR, which is no points, no catch. And this is where running backs are always at an all-time high because receivers, I've always been, I don't know about the zero running back theory, which means you don't draft any running backs until like the fourth or fifth round and just go receiver, 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 tight end, or whatever you build, because there's always been some value in running backs at the end. And in PPR, that's especially true because you can get a player like Chris Thompson, who I mentioned earlier, who's going to get five catches for 35 yards, maybe six carries for 30 yards. Well, that's over 10 points, and that's a solid outing. That's the same thing as Ezekiel Elliott getting 100 yards and no touchdowns with no catch and stuff like that. So it's just like a weird dynamic. Or like Kareem Hunt getting 40 yards and a touchdown, it's the same thing. So I prefer to like PPR because I like the higher scoring. I like the running. Because if you don't have PPR, then it limits who is a great player. And it pretty much is like whoever gets the best player is going to, obviously that makes sense. Like whoever has the best season should win. But if you were going up against Gurley last year, and pretty much Gurley, whoever had him, won after his crazy games in week 15 and 16, the semifinal and championship games. So whoever had him just won, and there's no way to counteract that when one guy is getting 40, 50 points. without PPR points, so I'm scoring. And the best way to... I love receivers. If you watch me draft, you'd probably laugh because my whole draft is usually receiver, 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 maybe a running back or tight end. I love the zero running back. I've been on board with the zero running back for years, probably like 5-6 years now, because I'm just like, you know, it just makes sense. And I, in my main league, we play bonuses too. So if you had 100 receiving yards, 100 rushing yards, 300 passing yards, you get an extra, I think, 5 or 10 points. You know, it sounds stupid, but it's just like, it's just a way to keep the game interesting, you know. I it's fantasy football, it's fake football, so you try to build it in your own. You want to build your league how you see fit. So, I'm probably going to go position by position and maybe even do a round by round strategy. I think I'll start round by round strategy, which will help me, which will open up the conversations for a positional conversation and stuff like that. So if you have the first pick, Todd Gurley seems to be the consensus. The top three are Todd Gurley, Le'Veon Bell, Ezekiel Elliott, with the latter two being in some order. And if you have one of the first three picks, and this is even me, if I have one of the first four or five picks, there's a 95% chance I will take one of these four running backs. You know, because Gurley gets a lot of Gurley, especially in PPR, because Gurley and Bell and David Johnson, who's the fourth one, they get a ton of work in the pass game. Gurley, yeah, I mean, Le'Veon Bell's a guarantee for like 60 catches every year. Gurley is now being, was used so much in the pass game, had a bunch of receiving touchdowns and all that. But the only thing, I actually, the safest pick out of these four is probably Zeke. Because yes, Le'Veon's going to get run into the ground by Pittsburgh. We know that because it's his it's most likely his final season with the team. But he's already had, and I know he keeps his body in great shape. He doesn't play preseason, so he's not taking, he doesn't go to camp, so he's not taking these extra hits. But what is it? Zeke is playing behind the best offensive line out of the three or four. Dak Prescott and the Cowboys, they don't have any receivers. They've been a run-heavy offense for the better part of a decade. We know what they're going to do, and teams still can't stop it. And it's not like Zeke's not talented. Zeke's in shape this year. He looks strong. The Cowboys are looking to surprise teams. And Zeke was still he wasn't as great as he was in his rookie year, but he was a pretty solid fantasy player last year with all that reporting to camp out of shape, having the 6-game suspension hovering over his head throughout the whole season, you could say. And I just think Zeke's going to blow up this year. There's talks that he is going to try to break 2,000 yards. He's not the best pass catcher, but he get him on a screen pass with those phenomenal offensive linemen in Dallas. He can run behind them, we saw him take a bunch of plays to the house because he just gets behind his own lines and he has the speed and he can run through people. So honestly, Gurley's explosive, but there should be some touchdown regression with him. He led the league in touchdowns as a skill player. And I think I know that Sean McVay is runs one of the best offensive schemes in football in terms of putting people in space. I just think that there will be some regression for him. He's been injured a little bit, but he's young. I don't think there's any injury concerns. I just prefer Zeke. I prefer stable. And in the first round, I know what I'm going to get from Zeke. His 2 years in the league, he's been great. Gurley, great his rookie year for the first like 5 or 6 games, stalled. Then his second year was not good. Terrible, you could say. And then last year, everything opened up for him and everything clicked at a perfect time. Le'Veon, I mentioned my concerns, but I mentioned that with him. And David Johnson is probably, he was the consensus number one player last year, and we're forgetting that for some reason. Like before he got injured, he had a bunch of touches, looking great plays. Then he had that freak wrist injury and missed the whole season. Their offensive line is still not great, but their offensive line's a little better. Sam Bradford's there. who's going to be in shotgun. So Johnson's going to be getting a lot of looks. There's going to be a lot of, what's the word? There's going to be a lot. There's a better quarterback situation. So there's going to be a lot more. There should be more running lanes for David Johnson. And, you know, if you're the fourth pick and you're sitting there in a PPR, non-PPR league, and you're like, dang, I missed out on Gurley, on Bell, and on Zeke, David Johnson's just as good of a bet to do something special as the other four. But, and then after those four, I think those four, for sure, if you're in a PPR league and you just love Antonio Brown, love watching him play, you know, take him. By all means, take him. But I would hold off, and this is where the debate of the second half of the first round comes in. The second, if you're playing a 10-team league, because Antonio Brown's there, DeAndre Hopkins. I'm looking at CBS Sports rankings right now. There's DeAndre Hopkins, Saquon, Leonard Fournette, Kamara, Melvin Gordon. You know, there's a good mix of that. Odell's a little bit. I mean, I was watching ESPN's fantasy draft, and Odell went 15th overall, and I'm like, this guy's been a top 10 player forever. It's just weird to see probably the most electrifying player in football. That's weird to say. I think about The Rock, like electrifying man in wrestling and stuff like that. It's just weird to say out loud. But you're looking at someone of Odell Beckham's stature, and you're wondering why is he falling and all these stuff. So PPR, you'd obviously go higher. But if you're a non-PPR, you're looking at the running backs next. You have Saquon, Kareem Hunt, Kamara, Gordon, Fournette, and maybe even a little Dalvin Cook, depending on how he looks. And you think to yourself, do I trust the New York Giants O-line to improve enough to help Saquon? Is Kareem Hunt a one-year wonder? Or, you know, if you look at the later in the year, and I know we blew up for the first couple of weeks, but after that, Jarkandrick West started chipping into his pass-catching duties. Spencer Ware missed the whole season, which opened up the door for Kareem Hunt. Now Spencer Ware's back, so Spencer Ware's going to chink into that a little bit. Put a little chink in, you know, Kareem Hunt's armor and stuff like that. And then Fournette, do you trust Jacksonville's offense? I think I like Fournette a little more because Fournette is he's gonna get 20, 30 carries every game. You know their defense. You know that their defense is going to put them in position and they're going to be in all these games so they can afford to run the ball. We know that Doug Maroon wants to run the ball. And they invested in Andrew Norwell, who's one of the best guards in football. And they brought him into the mix with their offensive line. Their young offensive line's improving. So for next, this is the part where I would not, where you could, this is like, you know, after the first four, maybe first five, Antonio Brown, you can go anywhere after this. Any of these people make sense to me. The players I would avoid are Saquon, Kareem Hunt. I don't want to say Alvin Kamara because he's so much fun to watch play. But are we sure that the carries and touches are going to be there again? Are we 100% sure about that? He came out of the scene last year and it was just amazing. Now teams know what to expect. They're going to game plan to stop him and stop him alone. I don't know if it's just blowing smoke, but I've read that with Mark Ingram being suspended for the first four games, they're not even going to increase Kamara's workload. What's the game? We know the touches he's going to get. Could he have a slight touchdown regression? Maybe, but it's clear that Sean Payton wants to keep using him in crazy ways. And keep his efficiency at a high level, keep him fresh for the whole season. So I look at a guy like Melvin Gordon. I pick Melvin Gordon over Barkley and Hunt and Kamara because he had 50, 60 catches last year. We know that he's their best, the clear workhorse for the Chargers. He's not sharing any of the load, which is something that when you're making a decision between players like a Kamara and stuff like this. We'll even throw Fournette and Saquon in there just for the sake of argument. So you look at Gordon, Fournette, and Saquon versus Kareem Hunt and Kamara, and you're thinking to yourself, you know, fantasy is about mostly two things: volume and efficiency. Volume of touches, volume of chances, and how efficient you are in those chances. So you look at a Kamara and a Hunt, they were extremely efficient last year, but the volume was not there. Saquon is going to be the every down back for the Giants. They drafted him number 2 overall to do that. Fournette may not get all the pass catching work that the others are going to get, but he is going to be their they're going to be their early down workhorse, get all the goal line touches, get everything like that, because he's efficient. So he has volume and efficiency. Melvin Gordon, Chargers are one of the best offenses in football. They're going to get up and down the field, and they're going to run the ball too. And when they get to the goal line, Melvin Gordon is the clear cut goal line guy. Volume and efficiency. So you're looking at Hunt and Kamara. They had the efficiency part last year, but the volume isn't there compared to Barkley and Kamara and Gordon. I mean, sorry, not Kamara. Compared to Barkley, Fournette, and Melvin Gordon. And even a Dalvin Cook, although Dalvin Cook's going to be in an early timeshare with Latavius Murray because he's coming off an ACL tear himself, and they want to keep him fresh as possible for the road ahead for the long season that Minnesota plans to have. So, you know, those people, I think, I'm looking down at this and it's like the receivers are so deep that this could be a chance where you go running back heavy. And I would, for my rankings of running back, heading it, this is strictly running backs. I'll pull up the running back thing real quick. And this is PPR. I think most people play PPR these days. So for PPR, I think they go, for non-PPR, I'd go Zeke 1. For PPR, I go Le'Veon, Zeke, Gurley, David Johnson. I really like Melvin Gordon. Probably Saquon. Kareem Hunt, Fournette, Kamara. I really like Joe Mixon too. Joe Mixon, this is where he gets like the Joe Mixons of the world. I'm going to get to in a little bit and stuff like that. You know, there's a lot of people, a lot of talent. So I'd probably stop looking for running backs after 5 and then try to target a DeAndre Hopkins or an Antonio Brown. Those are two clear-cut, the best receivers in terms of volume and efficiency. And with a lot of unknown, not unknown around Odell, but with him being injured last year and we don't know how good Eli Manning is, it's tough to project. First round pick, all you want a safe player. You don't want to take any chances and go gung-ho in the first round. You want a player who you know is going to be there. You can't predict the future, but you have a good idea he's going to be there week in and week out. He's going to get a bunch of targets, a bunch of carries, whatever position you're aiming for, and he's going to do well with it, and he's going to perform well, and he has the infrastructure around him to do so. A lot of things with drafting receivers is you want to have a good quarterback. That sounds silly, but unless you're DeAndre Hopkins, who is catching passes from Tom Savage and a bunch of quarterbacks and T.J. Yates throughout his career, and he's always open, and he's always making plays, you know, Antonio Brown's numbers dip when Ben's not playing well and all these things like that. So I don't know how good Eli's going to be, which is why people like Julio Jones, when he's playing a Matt Ryan, they make sense. Like, they're solid bets. So, but one last thing on the first round, and there's a player that he's known pretty much for just being a goofball more than anything, but Rob Gronkowski deserves a look in the first round. You take a look at the Patriots offense. Their main receivers are Chris Hogan, Julian Edelman's out for the first 4 games, suspended. Cordell Patterson, Philip Dorsett. And you're like, what player is going to benefit most from that? And that's Rob Gronkowski. And you look at the tight end list, and, you know, I'm a big Zach Ertz fan, But when Gronk is rolling, there's no one near him. Travis Kelce is the same. We'll see how he is with Mahomes. So if you can get Gronk, who his auction rate is going at 20, is going at almost double of the next tight end. And if you think, and for those people who don't know auction, that's when you draft a, say, like everyone has $200 or however much you're given. And you say, okay, Rob Gronkowski, $15. And then everyone just keeps, and then people go around the room until it's an auction. So whoever has the highest bidder gets the player. And then that sum is subtracted from their total of dollars. So Gronk is valued twice as much as any tight end. He's playing with Tom Brady. He's playing with no Julian Edelman. And he is the clear red zone threat. He is the clear go-to guy along with Chris Hogan. And there's a lot of targets to be out there, to be held out there. We don't know how good the running game is going to be, because if Burkhead's not healthy, they're going to be throwing Jeremy Hill out there and Burkhead and Sony Michel at less than 100%. Which means this is opening up to be a strictly Brady-esque season where he just goes crazy and throws the ball everywhere. So why wouldn't you want to get on that and, you know, ride that wave? Gronk here, if you get, see, there's so much depth at running back and wide receiver that you can afford to miss, you can afford to take, to be a little more patient with this position. Because I'm looking down at the running back position, you can get Joe Mixon. If you go into the season with Joe Mixon and, give me someone, Christian McCaffrey as your running backs, and then in the first two rounds you go Gronk and then Odell, or Gronk and then Julio, you are looking pretty, and then you can, later on, there's so many more receivers in the fourth round. You know, there's just a bunch of receivers, there's a bunch of talent these days because it's such an offensive heavy league that you can afford to be patient. If you get Gronk, and then you're looking around and you're like, man, next guy is Kelce, you know, people, that's such an advantage to have over all your opponents week in and week out, where you look up, you know, I got Gronk. I pretty much have a fourth receiver on my team. And it's a pretty potent fourth receiver. So I have that little head-to-head matchup edge over my opponent. So I'd probably have him in my top 10. I was going to do a list, but I'm going to do a list just for you guys. The four running backs: Antonio Brown, Hopkins. So that's six. Gronk's in there. Melvin Gordon's in there. Saquon's in there. And then if you had the, and then, you know, between Fournette and Kareem Hunt, I'd probably lean Fournette for the reasons I said earlier with volume and efficiency. And we don't know, Kansas City's O-line's not looking too sharp. We don't know how that offense is going to look with Mahomes, who, I love Mahomes, but I don't know if he's going to be ready for this. There's a lot of hype on, there's a lot of weight on his shoulders, and I'm not sure if he's ready to take, to make, have Kansas City take the leap and stuff like that, you know. People, this is going to be a year where we realize just how good Alex Smith is, if he is or not. When he left San Francisco, Colin Kaepernick came in and was great, but that team was led by a defense and an established ground game, and Jim Harbaugh was at the top of his coaching skills there. So, you know, all right. So we're going to round two, and we're going to talk a little bit more about the receiver picture. And this is a point where, you know, a lot of people go, after getting their premier running back, they want, I want the best receiver possible. So people consensus top two, always have been, always will be, Antonio Brown and DeAndre Hopkins. And then it gets a little tricky. People have their own little takes and stuff like that. For PPR concerns, my next two are Keenan Allen and Michael Thomas. Keenan Allen out of the Los Angeles Chargers, who exploded. When he's healthy, he is my favorite receiver to watch. Outside of Antonio, he's probably second or third best route runner. His catch radius is unbelievable. I love Keenan Allen. And you look at the Chargers, Philip Rivers is going to throw, you know, Philip Rivers is going to throw for 4,000 yards every year. And you look at the Chargers receiving core, they drafted Mike Williams last year, He missed most of the season. He's back now looking. He's going to be a red zone threat. He's not going to take any receptions away. What's his name? I got to look it up real quick. I don't want to mess up his first name. Tyrell Williams. He's a deep threat. Travis Benjamin, they're all deep threats. And there's not one person in the NFL that can cover Keenan Allen one-on-one. He torched everyone last year. He was perfect example of the volume and efficiency that I'm preaching. Same with Michael Thomas. Michael Thomas is out of the New Orleans. He was pretty much a lock for 7 catches, 80 yards every single game last year. He had two touchdowns in one game, at least 3 to 4 touchdowns call back to the 1-inch line. And he had a couple touchdowns last year. So he's due for a touchdown progression. I love New Orleans offense. I think Michael Thomas is still underrated. He's going to get the volume and efficiency. He has Drew Brees throwing him the ball. And there's no reason that he should be slipping past the second round. I think he should go ahead of the likes of Julio Jones and Odell Beckham. Julio Jones has Matt Ryan thrown him the ball, but we haven't seen the efficiency in the red zone. I feel like that's been a point for the past couple seasons that, you know, Julio does not get involved in the red zone. We need to get Julio involved more he's not efficient and all these things. But I don't know if that's scheme. I don't know if they want to run the ball with Devontae Freeman, who's an efficient runner in the red zone area. I'm not sure what to make of that. But for some reason, Julio does not perform well in the red zone, and he is too inconsistent for my liking. He'll have the blow-up game against the Bucs once a year, where he'll go for 250 yards, 2 touchdowns, and then he needs a no-show in the next game. So that's not something that I'll enjoy. Odell is coming off ankle injury. We don't know how good the Giants are going to be. Eli Manning is still their quarterback, who, yes, when Odell's on the field, Odell does fine, but it's still an aging Eli. And I just don't think the volume is going to be there as much as Michael Thomas and Keenan Allen, especially in a PPR-based league. And those seem to be the consensus top 5, top 6. AJ Green's right on the outside looking in. AJ Green, another one of my favorites. Talented, he's probably as talented as any wide receiver in the NFL. And when Cincinnati has a decent to an average to good offensive line, Andy Dalton's actually a good quarterback. That makes AJ Green a lot more viable fantasy player. They have help now at the receiving core with John Ross, who's not turning heads in camp and making progress from his bust status a year ago. Auden Tate from FSU is going to be another red zone threat to take attention off. Tyler Croft is a solid tight end. Tyler Eifert, I don't know if he's going to be there. And they invested in their O-line. So I think AJ, this is, of everyone outside the top 6, AJ Green is definitely like the top. I feel like the top 7 are for certain. And if you took AJ Green above Keenan Allen or any of them, I wouldn't fault you. He's consistent as they come. He plays, knock on wood, plays as much as anyone. He's there week in, week out. He has a great connection with Andy Dalton. It's just a matter of the Bengals O-line playing well. And I happen to think that they're going to take a step forward this year and play relatively well. And then after that, it's a lot of preference. Outside of the top 7, let me repeat it real quick. Antonio Brown, DeAndre Hopkins, Julio Jones, Keenan Allen, Odell Beckham, Michael Thomas, AJ Green. If any of those 7 are available after the second round and you can grab one of them, then you should be jumping for joy. So the biggest fall from this perceived top 7 list has been the Bucs receiver Mike Evans. And I'm not 100% on board with him falling this much, but it makes sense. I mean, you look at the Bucs, they actually have an improved receiving core. So the high volume isn't going to be there. And he actually has a lot of drops, so he's not as efficient as you would like to be with his target number. But so yeah. I don't, unless he's available late, I don't see myself drafting Mike Evans at all. Especially when you look one slot up, when you look at, I'm looking at the CBS rankings, and these guys have him and have T.Y. Hilton right below him. And I'm thinking, I'm like, T.Y. Hilton is not a good, he's a great receiver when Andrew Luck's there. He leads the league, he's led the NFL in receiving yards when Andrew Luck is healthy. Andrew Luck looks healthy. T.Y. Hilton still has all of his speed. T.Y. Hilton should be the eighth, should be number eight in this list, with plenty of room to jump above that list. They have Davante Adams, who's going to be, who was a touchdown, led the league in touchdowns last year. He's a touchdown fiend. He's Aaron Rodgers' number one receiver, which is all that matters, because if you look at the history, Jordy Nelson was there, Davante Adams was there. And the thing about, which kind of shocked me about them, Davante Adams last year, is that Jordy Nelson was still, was healthy last year, but defenses would put their top corners on Davante Adams and have him shadow him, which says, you know what, Adams is the guy now. And Adams is as tough as they come. With guys like Rodgers and Breeze, I mean, Rodgers and Brady and Breeze too, but especially with Rodgers, if he doesn't trust you, he's not going to throw you the ball, period. And he trusts Adams more so than any person on this team, besides Randall Cobb. And Randall Cobb's not going to want anything. Randall Cobb is a guy you should grab in round 7 or 8 as a guy, like, you know, it's Rodgers' number two receiver. And if you're looking for a receiver, if you're looking for a strong bet to be a viable fantasy player, Randall Cobb is as solid as they come, especially in the Rodgers' number two slot. And especially with teams now going to be, now are going to be playing a lot, playing their defenses a lot more angled towards Davante Adams. So I like Adams and Hilton are definitely 8 and 9 for me. And then you're looking, if it's PPR, Larry Fitzgerald has to be number 10, because that guy's 100, easy lock for 100 catches every year. And that was with Drew Stanton, Blaine Gabbert throwing the rock. Now he has Sam Bradford throwing him the ball, who lives and dies in the intermediate, in the 8 to 12 yard range of the attempts, which is just so happens to be where Larry Fitzgerald makes all of his money. Just so happens to be that Larry Fitzgerald is still one of the best slot receivers in the NFL. And with David Johnson back, there's going to be attention elsewhere. And I just have a feeling Bradford's just going to look across the middle and look for Larry Fitzgerald every single time. He's getting better with, he hasn't aged at all. He's still one of the best receivers in the NFL, and he's still overlooked in fantasy drafts. He's a league winner because people are like, oh man, Larry Fitz. And he just keeps, and he falls in drafts because they think that he's losing a step. And they look at the quarterback situation in Arizona. They're like, you know, people think since Kurt Warner has left this that he hasn't been a great receiver in terms of fantasy production, and that's just not true. So the volume's there. He's efficient as they come, and now he has a solid quarterback throwing him the ball. So don't be afraid to pull the trigger on Larry Fitzgerald round 3, round 4. He's going to be there. There's a 100% chance he's going to fall. And if you can get, this is a dream scenario. You go first 2 rounds, you go running back. Just say you're like, you know, you want Zeke, and then someone else comes around, and then you get middle of the round, you get like a Dalvin Cook or a McCaffrey in a PPR situation. I'm not going to jump from McCaffrey, but you get my drift here. You then go round 3 and 4 with a T.Y. Hilton and Larry Fitzgerald. You are setting yourself up perfectly because you have a player in Hilton who has explosion potential week in, week out, and then you have Larry Fitzgerald, who's a steady, consistent player. And as Hilton's consistent too, but he can just blow up any time. And then after that, there's just a lot of receivers. And I usually go 0 running back. I do that. But I'm looking at this, and I'm just like, man, there are there's a lot of talent at the receiver position. So that makes up my top 10. And just outside my top 10, I probably go some combination of Amari Cooper, Stephon Diggs, Mike Evans, and stuff like that. So first 2-round plan, like I said, not everything is, you know, I can't say this is what you should do, this is what you should do, because every draft is different, and you know your league. Like, I know my league, so that like affects my strategy going into my draft night. But So I'm not but. So looking at this, I would say first four picks, grab a running back. 100% sure. Do not hesitate. Grab one of those running backs. After that, read your room. If you know people are running back heavy, and they don't do the zero running back thing, grab or vice versa. Say you a lot of people go running back heavy. Don't let them affect your strategy in terms of reaching. Have go in there with a plan, saying after these first four running backs, I really want an Antonio Brown. I really want a DeAndre Hopkins. I want to get a star receiver, a volume and efficient base receiver on my team. And then depending how it comes around, because, you know, even in non-PPR leagues, if you can leave your second round with a B or a Hopkins, and then a snake comes around and you get, you know, like, oh man, most of the star running backs are gone. Just because the star running backs are gone, eight of the first 10 picks running backs, and then maybe 12 of the first 15, 14 picks running backs, and you're picking 15. That doesn't mean you should reach. That means there's a wealth of receivers to be had. So you can pick, maybe even it's 10 of 14 are the first picks are running backs. Okay, that's fine. Grab a receiver, and then you look at your running back list, and it comes around, and that means there's been like 20 picks, and you don't have too many running backs available, but there's still going to be a Joe Mixon, an Alex Collins who is really solid out of Baltimore. You know, there's going to be running backs for you to take later in the draft, because the running back position is so injury prone outside of those top four guys, and even the top four guys are injury prone. David Johnson missed time. Le'Veon Bell, I'm not going to put any curses on him. He's not due to miss time, but he's a stud when it comes to volume and efficiency, but for consecutive seasons with 400 touches and getting hit a bunch of times, that has to wear someone out, although he's a freak of nature. Todd Gurley he was great last year, but his touchdowns were so high that you think they have to regress a little bit and stuff like that. So there's always that chance with the running backs. And the receivers, yeah, but the receivers are so protected these days. You know, they can't get hit across the middle. If they get touched, it's a penalty. If they seem to get touched at all after 5 yards, it's a penalty. So defenders are giving them space and stuff like that. So just take your time and know your draft room. First four running backs, they should absolutely be your pick. That should 100% be the truth. And if they're not, then be the person who takes advantage of that. So, and then around one, say you get an Antonio Brown and you come around, there should be 10 running backs, 10. I mean, you should be waiting for that second round to come around and saying, these are my two or three players I wanted to pick. If these two running backs, you know, I sometimes like to leave my first two rounds with a running back and wide receiver. That's good. If this running back is not available, if Joe Mixon, if Fournette, and even if Mixon's not available, if Fournette, Dalvin, and Gordon are not available when my turn comes around, if you're doing a snake in that second round, you should absolutely not, you shouldn't reach. So that's pretty much the gist of it. You know, I'm looking at the later on. We're going to touch on this a little bit in the second round. We're going to start with the quarterbacks. But later, a little bit in the second round, I'm talking like Derrick Henry and Deion Lewis. You get both of them later on in the draft, that's fine. Rex Burkhead, okay. James White is now going to be skyrocketing in terms of value with PPR because Burkhead and Michelle are slightly banged up. You know, the Packers running back situation, you can bite the bullet and draft Ty Montgomery. He could win the job, and then you can also draft Aaron Jones, who's coming off suspension. It could be his job in 3 weeks, and you have a starting running back for the Green Bay Packers who's going to get a lot of touches and a lot of chances offensively. People forget Chris Carson last year from the Seahawks. He was extremely impressive until he went out with an injury, and he's apparently turning heads at camp. Their offensive line is slightly improved. They don't have the, they don't have Tom Cable, the offensive line coach, so they're shifting things up there. You know, he's even further down. There's just a bunch of Jay Ajayi doesn't look. He's not the most. He's not the sexiest pick, but he's a starting. He's the main running back and main cog for one of the most efficient offenses in football. Who feeds their running backs, uses their running backs, are in the red zone very much. So, Mark Ingram. Yes, he's missing a quarter of the season, and yes, Kamara has emerged. But go look at Mark Ingram's stats. And see how great he was for his touches and volume and efficiency. See, the Saints, you know, we think of them as this pass-happy offense. We think of them as this Drew Brees, Sean Payton machine that just picks you apart through the air and stuff like that, which they do because they usually have such a terrible defense that they have to be throwing at all times. But the Saints have been at their best. They won a Super Bowl with the number one rushing offense. There's plenty to go around. Mark Ingram was their running back in the goal line situations because he's efficient. So if you're telling me I'm going to get 15 carries, about three or four catches for Mark Ingram every single week, I counted him to get 70, 80 total yards and a touchdown. That's PPR, that's 16, 17 points. Non-PPR, that's 14 points. He doesn't get a touchdown, that's still 8 points in a non-PPR situation, which is pretty, you know, that's pretty good. That's not great, but that's a pretty good bet. And you can get him late in drafts, all that stuff. You know, Marshawn Lynch with the Raiders, the offensive line looks great. They're running some pretty good schemes with John Gruden now. He looks great. His first carry, he took it 60 yards of the house, got called back, but he took it 60 yards of the house. He's available late in game. He's going to be later in drafts. You know, so there's a bunch. So if you miss out on running backs and everyone in your league is grabbing him at will, just remain patient. You know, there's players like Kerryon Johnson from the Detroit Lions who's going to be there because Detroit has a great offensive line now and they've been dying for a running game and they need balance. They absolutely 100% need balance and they're going to use that. They're going to use Johnson for said balance. So I'm just scrolling down the list here. You know, there's just a Carlos Hyde for the Browns, Duke Johnson for the Browns. There's just so many. I mean, Tariq Cohen is later in the drafts, and if you're in a PPR league, you know he's going to be using the passing game. So, just Royce Freeman for the Broncos. He's a rookie. He's impressing. He's going to be the starter. So, I mean, I haven't even talked about all these running backs. Jerick McKinnon, the list goes on, and I'm going to go to the bottom feeders of this. And Rob Kelly, I talked about him a little bit in the intro. He's going to be available now. He is going to be a starting running back who, yes, he does not turn heads, but he's a guy who's going to have volume. He's going to get goal line carries. And who knows, maybe he gets, he's going to get, I had him last year. He had like 25 carries. Him and Samaj Perine, hopefully he's not injured too bad, but him and Samaj Perine, they get like 25 carries. And if they average 4 yards per carry, that's 100 yards. That's 10 points. Gruden's committed to the run. Alex Smith is going to open up the running game because he can make throws, and they run read option. And that's going to, and I saw in Kelly picked up a bunch of yards on a read option play where Smith holds the defender. And that's just something that wasn't there the past couple years, and that's there now. So, I mean, just another thing. One player, Jordan Wilkins from the Colts. You get him dirt cheap, probably around 15. People are going to be jumping from Marlon Mack as a starter in Indianapolis, but Wilkins has been turning heads. So be smart drafting your team. Don't freak out with the running backs especially because we know one of these running backs in the top 15 is going to get injured. Just the nature of the beast and how it goes playing running back in the modern NFL. And NFL throughout ever. That's pretty much how it's been forever. So, remain patient with running backs. Stick to your draft plan, and then go from there. So, I know not people like fantasy advice, but you know, it is what it is. So, We're going to leave it at that. We're going to be back for part two of the Fern podcast on Radio St. Pete after these messages and station identification.